I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore! I want you to get up right now. Get up, go to your windows, open them, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. Things have got to change. Then we'll figure out what to do about the depression and the inflation and the oil crisis. But first, get up out of your chairs, open the window, stick your head out and yell, and say, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. Stick your head out of the window, open it, and stick your head out and keep yelling and yell, I'm as mad as hell, I'm not going to take this anymore. Just get up from your chairs right now. Climb!
I'm mad as hell! How am I going to take this anymore?
I'm mad as hell! I'm not going to take it anymore! I'm mad as hell! I'm not
going to
take it anymore!
I'm mad as hell! I'm not going to take it anymore!
I'm mad as hell!
I'm not gonna take it anymore!
Hello and welcome to Great Speeches and Interviews from Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and coming up first is Media Matters host Max Blumenthal from Sunday, November 15, 2009. Mr. Blumenthal discusses his book, Republican Gomorrah, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party. And then after that, from December 17, 2009, Stuart Schultz interviews Naomi Klein, journalist and author of The Shock Doctrine. They talk about Clinton's surprise press conference at the Climate Change Conference in Copenhagen. And then, after that, Field Notes from a Catastrophe, Man, Nature, and Climate Change by Elizabeth Colbert.
Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today, Sunday, November 15th, 2009. Probably for about two decades now, the Christian right, if not longer than two decades, the Christian right has been a dominant theme in American politics, its role, both of praise and criticism. Yet we don't know a great deal about this phenomenon. Today we're going to have an author, an expert on the subject, who has spent years studying the Christian right among their ranks and will report back to us on what he found. Our guest today will be Max Blumenthal, author of Republican Gomorrah. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today on WILL AM 580, based in beautiful Urbana, Illinois. Our guest today, Max Blumenthal, is an award-winning journalist and blogger whose articles and video documentaries have appeared in The New York Times, The Daily Beast, The Nation, The Huffington Post, Salon.com, Al Jazeera English, and many other publications. We're here to talk about his new book, just released by Nation Books, a bestseller, Republican Gomorrah, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party. Max Blumenthal, welcome to Media Matters.
Great to be with you.
Max, how long has the book been out now?
It came out in early September.
And the book, just we'll start for listeners unfamiliar with it, why the title for the book, Republican Gomorrah, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party?
The title Republican Gomorrah was inspired by the Gomorrah-like sea of scandals that flooded the party, from Ted Haggard, the anti-gay pastor's homosexual affair with a male escort, to Mark Foley's bizarre scandal that was covered up by the Republican leadership, to Tom DeLay's alleged criminality as he led the Republican Congress to the mountaintop and then led it into the valley that it's currently in. It's about the sea of, it's a reference to the sea of scandals that flooded the party and that it basically drowned in, leading to its massive defeats in 2006. And staining the Republican brand by 2008, and of course the image of the Republican Party that it's projected is the pro-family party, the party of mom and apple pie, that's defined itself by God, gays and guns, but in fact the real picture of the party is something quite different, and I try to analyze why the party became that way and how it attracted people who were running away from themselves into the party, and those people who themselves were very conflicted, how they threw the party into conflict by projecting their personal crises onto one of the two major parties, and bringing out Sarah Palin as the major figure of the party and shattering it on a national level, preventing it from being able to hold appeal among moderates and independents.
Max Blumenthal, how did you do the research for this book, which, as you've already given an outline of, is a fairly extensive look at a number of main players in the Christian right movement over the past three or four decades?
For the past 6 years, I've covered this movement, along with other factions of the right, primarily the Christian right, because I was interested in the movement that I thought substantially controlled the Republican grassroots and had enormous influence in the Bush White House. That's when I got into journalism. Sort of what inspired me to get in was the fact that the mainstream media was derelict on this movement and would try to be fair and balanced and give equal hearing to people like Tony Perkins and James Dobson, who are extremists. And, I saw Tony Perkins on Hardball with Chris Matthews, and Chris Matthews was calling this guy a great American who was, crusading to institutionalized religious discrimination, and as I had revealed at The Nation, had palled around with white supremacist groups when he was a politician in Louisiana. And so I wanted to, reveal what this movement's real intentions were through reporting, just by picking up the phone and calling its leaders, going to its conferences and meeting with its followers and recording and documenting this history of the movement through extensive research. And what wound up happening was I came across a component of the movement that I think hadn't been revealed, which is the political psychology, just in talking to the followers of the movement and its leaders, especially the ones who are successful. I discovered that behind the, and we can get into this more in the show, that behind
yeah,
the,
definitely we will.
Behind the politics of resentment was a peculiar culture of personal crisis, confession, and transcendence. That really defined and animated the politics that I think no one in the secular media had tried to understand. And so that's part of what inspired me to write my book.
The book has many conversations with you or your participation in events that are hosted by the Christian right. And as you said, you've been writing about them for many years now and in a critical vein. And there's one instance where you're actually sort of tossed out of a Sarah Palin event towards the end of the book. But otherwise, in the book, it seems like you had surprising access to people involved with the Christian right.
Well, I often carry a camera, and as Susan Sontag said, if in America, you're not on TV, you're nobody. People within the Christian right believe that as well. They want to go on camera and express their views, and they don't realize, they have no capacity for self-reflection, most of them, so they don't realize that mainstream America thinks that these views are extreme. So what they say is very sincere and earnest, even though it might seem extreme and even unintentionally hilarious to many people. And without a camera, I think I can be even more disarming, because I simply just will go to their conferences or to their rallies and ask them basic questions. I'm not there to argue with them or to humiliate anybody. And I wish that, more of the progressive media would do the same. I think the blogging phenomenon can be sort of counterproductive when bloggers rely so often on the mainstream media and just frame what the mainstream media does instead of going and reporting themselves.
Our guest today in Media Matters is Max Blumenthal, author of the new book just published by Nation Books, Republican Gomorrah, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party. It's a national bestseller. It is a deep and thick description, explanation, portrayal of the key figures of the Christian right politically in the United States going back decades, but also with a strong emphasis on the prominent recent events. You've already mentioned Mark Foley and Sarah Palin, and we could go on and on. Everyone's in the book. And it will be a presentation of this material, unlike anything I've seen before that I think is available presently. I want to talk about some of the social psychology that you go into, which I find so interesting. But before we do, I think to give our listeners a real sense of some of the meat in the book, take some time, if you would, Max Blumenthal, and talk about James Dobson, a name that I think most Americans are familiar with. You hear about him occasionally as sort of a Christian right leader, but I think, like myself, it sort of floats in the background. It doesn't really register. He just sort of is another one of these names like Falwell and Swaggart and Robertson that sort of drifts by. In your book, Dobson, if I may say so, assumes really, I would say, almost a starring role.
Yeah. And the reason that he assumes a starring role is because I think he's played a greater role than Falwell or Robertson in cultivating the sensibility of the movement, in defining what the movement is culturally. While Robertson and Falwell have been really successful politically, I think Dobson would become more powerful, and it was because he wasn't a religious figure, even though he led a religious movement. He was not theological expert. In fact, he has no theological credentials, but he is, in fact, a child psychologist who understands the culture of personal crisis that animates the movement. Dobson's fame and fortune came from a little book called Dare to Discipline that he wrote in 1970. And this book, he wrote it because he was appalled and disgusted by the counterculture, and he blamed Dr. Benjamin Spock, who much of the baby boom generation had been raised on, on his child-rearing tactics. He blamed Spock for the counterculture. He called Spock the godfather of permissiveness, and Spock was also attacked by Spiro Agnew, Nixon's vice president. So Dobson wrote Dare to Discipline, another child-rearing manual, to raise up a new generation of Republican radicals who would demonstrate respect for authority and God and would take the country back from the hippies. And what his book really was a manual for child abuse. Dobson said that children should have their neck muscles pinched until they submitted to parents, that they should be hit with a neutral object, like a switch, because hands are for loving, that pain is a marvelous purifier, and that the child should be spanked with sufficient magnitude as to make him cry. The child is done crying, he will want to crumple to your breast, and the child should be welcomed with warm and loving arms. So essentially Dobson is recommending hitting and loving at the same time, which is actually sadomasochism. Not sexual sadomasochism, but a different kind of sadomasochism that Eric Fromm, the psychologist, discusses in his book, Escape from Freedom, which really forms a lot of the central ideas behind my book. And what Fromm said is that sadomasochism is the essential characteristic of the authoritarian personality. They're sadistic in that they have a tendency or desire to harm and punish those who they perceive as weaker than them or as social deviants. homosexuals, the poor, foreigners, minorities, Jews, and at the same time, they're masochistic in that they yearn to bow down and prostrate themselves before those who they perceive as stronger than them, a strong leader like Dobson, or even Sarah Palin, or the macho Jesus from Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ. And Dobson has cultivated that sadomasochistic tendency in the movement through his child-rearing techniques. His book has been reprinted over a dozen times. It's sold millions of copies, and his radio show is one of the top five radio shows in the country, but he rarely, although he just quit his radio show for the past 30 years, he's rarely talked about politics. What he talks about is the child-rearing techniques in his book, how to, you know, fix your marriage, how to solve your child's bedwetting problem. And he brings people in to his empire, focus on the family, through this help, and they can write to his correspondence department. And they're entered into a database after they receive Dobson-approved advice, and then they're bombarded with political mailings. And then he slowly transforms them into Republican shock troops and wields them against the Republican Party like a magic wand every election year, forcing the party to put up these radical candidates, including Sarah Palin, who John McCain selected in part to appease James Dobson, who had attacked McCain publicly as a liberal and said he refused to vote for him. So this is so from the culture of personal crisis, we get the this culture has shaped the radical character of the Republican Party and taken it to where it is today, where all the moderates are fleeing. And people who have actually been raised, and I think this is empirically provable, and I demonstrated it through my book, people who have been raised on Dobson's techniques are taking over the party.
Our guest today, who you've just been listening to, is Max Blumenthal, the journalist and the author of the new book by Nation Books, the national bestseller, Republican Gomorrah, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party. We're talking about the political right. Right now, if you'd like to call in with a question or comment for Max Blumenthal, the number here at WILL is 333-9455, our toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. And just to be a little more concrete about Max, about James Dobson's political influence, I mean, virtually every major Republican figure in Congress or national politics in the last 10 or 15 years, as I read your book, has basically had to have a road that went right through James Dobson to sort of guarantee their power.
Absolutely. And every Republican primary candidate has to show their wares before Dobson and his flock at the Value Voters Summit, which is a new convention Dobson and Tony Perkins have been hosting. You have to go on Dobson's radio show if you're a Republican leader in the Senate or the House, and many of the people who led the Republican Congress when it was in power were actually converted by Dobson personally, like Tom DeLay, who was once known as Hot Tub Tommy when he was an alcoholic, philandering, no-name legislator in Texas. But he was transformed through the techniques of Dobson, through the teachings of Dobson, when he came into Congress in Washington, into the hammer, this dictatorial, sadistic leader who hung two bullwhips behind his desk and advocated a strict dominionist interpretation of Christianity that should be installed in place of the Constitution. So Dobson has had a personal effect on a lot of the leaders of Congress, in addition to holding meetings in the Capitol basement where he threatened to pull support for the party and form a third party in 1996 if the party didn't implement his vision for society, which included abolishing the National Endowment for the Arts, defunding Planned Parenthood, and a whole host of radical policies. And at this meeting, Dobson reduced one congressman's wife to tears. And this is part of what gave rise to the C Street House and so many of the evangelical right-wing institutions on Capitol Hill was the influence of figures like Dobson in, first of all, bringing these candidates into Washington who subscribe to his teachings and to this strict dominionist doctrine and bonding them together and using them as sort of cell groups against Republican moderates and against the Democrats.
You know, Max Blumenthal, as I was listening to you now and as I read the book, What was astonishing to me, and I shouldn't have been naive about this, and I probably knew this, but it didn't really become as clear as it did until I read your book, that although these are people who were self-professed Christians and self-professed extremely pious people, what was astonishing was what you just said about Tom DeLay, which was the notion that the ends justify the means and that it was entirely appropriate to have a hypocritical, entire double standard in which insiders who were part of the team got treated differently than those outside.
Right. Right. I mean, and we saw that recently with what happened in the C Street House, where all of these legislators who are close to Dobson, who are from the movement, from Mark Sanford, who lived there when he was a representative, who's an ordained Baptist minister, and a right-wing evangelical, to Chip Pickering, another right-wing evangelical who's the son of a notorious white supremacist from Mississippi, or alleged white supremacist, who himself spoke to a white supremacist group in 2002, to John Ensign, the only Pentecostal in the Senate, extremely right-wing senator from Nevada. These guys all had extramarital affairs, either in this house, this Christian fellowship, the C Street House, or they conducted cover-ups, conspiring with other members of the C Street House to cover up their actions inside the C Street House. And the whole point of it is that these guys believed they were elected by Christ to serve in government, and therefore they were not accountable to their constituents. They weren't accountable to secular society. They were only accountable to each other and to God. And when Mark Sanford confessed his affair with his Latina lover, which he carried out largely through state taxpayer money when he was governor of South Carolina, in this press conference, and the mainstream press completely missed this part, he said, the reason why we follow God's law is because when we follow God's law in order to restrain the self from the self. In other words, we have to do what God wants us to do, because if we do what we want to do, we will tend to do some really freaky stuff. And that's what they believe. That's part of the psychology that Dobson has cultivated. The idea that the self is inherently sinful, I mean, it comes from Calvinism. John Calvin said once that he was looking at a baby in its crib and he saw the baby seething with sin. But the self is inherently sinful, it's bad, and the self has to be dissolved and eradicated through authoritarian child-rearing techniques and authoritarian politics. And that's what Eric Fromm warned about in 1941 when he wrote this book, Escape from Freedom, that those who fear personal freedom, those who can't handle the pressures of open society and a democratic culture, will inevitably form authoritarian structures and follow authoritarian leaders. And so that's who the followers and many of the leaders of the Christian right are, people who are afraid of themselves and who need to do what God wants them to do. And it's of course, this macho Jesus who appears in Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ. It's not the Prince of Peace or the loving God who appears in the Bible. It's very dangerous.
Our guest today, Max Blumenthal, you've been listening to the author of the new book, Republican Gomorrah, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party. The number here at Media Matters on WILL AM 580 is 333-9455, toll-free 1-800-222-9455. Our phone lines are filling up quickly, so let's get right to the phones now. Let's start with line one, Champagne. You're on the air with Max Blumenthal.
Hello, am I on?
You are indeed.
Okay, thanks for having me on, and I haven't read the book yet. I'm highly interested. My question is regarding the theology of the folks that we're discussing. This heavy emphasis on spiritual warfare, that there's the forces of dark, there's forces with Satan, the forces with God, and there's no in-between. And it's us against them, you know, you're either with us or you're with Satan. And it leads to what I've seen in small group discussions among Christians, themes like, you know, Sarah Palin is anointed by God. Why? Because she struggled through all her personal crises, and God touched her, and she went from being to being a superstar. And I go, well, Obama did the same thing. They go, oh no, he's with Satan. Could you comment on that worldview of warfare, of the warrior. They talk about warrior anointing, and they got to be warriors in the army of the Lord. Now that ties into their also their apocalyptic view of they're besieged by the forces of evil. And I'll listen now.
Thank you very much, caller. Max Blumenthal?
Yeah, the concept of spiritual warfare is really important. I mean, it's central to this movement. It's spiritual warfare is the idea that behind what we see in reality, there's a hidden battle between God and Satan, and that God and Satan essentially are controlling everything secretly, and we have to look for signs of this battle, which gives rise to this Manichaean worldview of the movement that that the caller referred to, that it's completely black and white and there's no in-between. When I interviewed Tom DeLay in 2006 at a conference of Pastor John Hagee, this end times theology proponent who's become really influential through the Christian Zionist movement, Tom DeLay told me, in addition to the fact that he was waiting for the end times, that the criminal charges that had been brought against him for his illegal redistricting program in Texas were being brought against him by Satan. So in other words, everything bad that had befallen him was controlled by Satan. And everything good that he'd done because he was doing simply what God wanted him to do. So Tom DeLay could take no personal responsibility for his actions. It's no surprise if you externalize everything and see the world through this binary construct of good versus evil, that you're going to be a pretty corrupt person who can't take any responsibility for your actions.
More from Great Speeches and Interviews after these messages.